0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until three today. And I want to go straight over to Daniel now. Daniel, good afternoon.
Hello, yeah.
Daniel, you're, I understand, in Crumlin Children's Hospital at the moment.
Yes.
You're at your daughter's bedside.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Before we go into... What's your daughter's name, Daniel?
My daughter's name is Sophia.
Sophia.
Yeah.
Okay, well, take us back to what landed you in this situation, Daniel. Take us back to Saturday the 7th of May, and you're at home in your home in Blanchardstown.
Yes, in Cordo, yeah.
Okay, and of course you're not originally from Blanchardstown, I'd say, with that accent, Daniel?
No, originally I'm from Romania, and I live in this country from 2002.
Okay, so you've been here a long
time. A long time, yes, indeed, yeah.
And you're settled in, you're living in Blanchardstown. So, yeah, take us back. Saturday, is it the afternoon?
Yes, Saturday it happened in around between 7 and 8 o'clock p.m. My daughter, my kids, they were inside, and my young daughter, Sophia, she was inside. All my other kids started going outside to play with their friends. And then a few kids from the neighbors, they came to my house and said, "Can you bring Sophia out? Will you let her out for us to play with her half an hour?" And I didn't know, because my neighbors, I'm a long time there. I'm very known to my neighbors there in Cordo. So I was just thinking, okay, I'll let my daughter outside to play. Then after exactly, I'd say, 10 minutes roughly, all I hear outside is just some screamings, kids screaming and neighbors screaming. So I never thought of anything that happened. When I go outside, just to see what's happening, all the neighbors are start shouting behind the car. There was a blue Jeep, a Q7. I didn't have a look at the reg, which my two neighbors there in Cordo, they have cameras in the front of their houses and on the main street as well. So I don't know if their cameras caught the reg number, but they said that it was a blue Q7, and I seen it myself. It was a blue Q7, a Jeep. So when I heard the noises, I start going outside. Next thing I see, my young son is keeping her in his arms, and my daughter was crying. So I just seen a scratch on the head. I seen a scratch on the little mouth. I thought she fell. Then the neighbors come directly to me and says, look, that Jeep over there, tell him to stop, that the person. I says, why, what's happening? And then they said, look, that little baby legs, he just started rolling over her legs. I was like, no way. I was in a shock. I didn't know what to do. And then I seen my daughter as well. I spotted her in the arms of my son. And I just started screaming because I didn't know what happened. I didn't know what was going on at that moment. So I started chasing the car for like about 7 seconds, 5, 6 to 7 seconds. I couldn't have a look at the reg right. I didn't take his reg because I wasn't thinking nothing, just to run after the car, because the neighbours as well were telling me he's just after running over her legs.
And did you see, was it a man or a woman? Could you see it was a man behind the wheel?
I couldn't see. I think it was a man. Definitely it was a man. I know it was a man behind the wheel. It wasn't a woman, definitely, for 100% sure. Okay. It was a man that was driving that car, that Jeep.
So you went back to Sophia?
Yeah, I went back to Sophie there. All the neighbours started gathering around. All the kids started crying because they just got paranoid there. They couldn't believe what they're seeing in front of them. The leg was a bit twisted, so she has blood coming out of the leg. And I didn't know what to do. I was just telling the neighbours, please ring me an ambulance, ring an ambulance. And I was just holding her myself there. So I was just in a shock. I didn't know what to do, how to react, what to say. My wife, she's pregnant, as I told you before. She's pregnant. She had to give birth. She had to go another month. But because of the stress and all everything, she was at the hospital. At this moment, as I'm speaking now, I'm at the hospital here at my daughter, because my wife was here with her. And the ambulance from Crumlin here brought her to the Rotunda Hospital. She's gone to give birth to another child there.
Oh, she went into labour.
Yeah, she went into labour, basically, which she had another month ago. But instead, they put her in in quicker beforehand, before Labouring Day.
You think because of the stress of what's happened,
yes,
to Sophia?
And I want to say this, please. If my neighbours here, if they're hearing this from Cordoff, where I live in Blanchardstown there, and if the police are hearing this as well, I want the law to be done, justice to be done at least, because it could have been your child, it could have been my child, and it could have been anybody's child. And as for God's sake, he could have left her dead there. She could have been dead, and that person just still fled the scene. He left the scene. He didn't stay there. The neighbours were shouting behind him. I was shouting. I run, as I said, 5, 6, 7 seconds. I run, chase the car down. And at the traffic lights, I know there's cameras as well. As I said, my neighbours had cameras as well. And hopefully the guards in Blanchardstown are doing all their best, which I think they are, to catch the person that fled the scene.
And tell me, Daniel, a lot of people will be listening to you now and wondering, how is Sophia now? What were her injuries when she was brought to hospital?
Her injuries, to be honest, the hospital is telling me they still cannot proceed for an operation, but she is ready whatsoever for an operation they want to do. But at the moment, they're just keeping an eye on the wound. They said it's starting to heal kind of a bit, but it's not majorish healing, if you get me. It's still in the wound there, because she's only a child and it's only a small leg there she has, and it's very hard for her to get it back on the go there. And she's still ready for an operation, and it doesn't really look good, to be honest, that good. I can let you speak with the doctor or anything and they'll tell you the truth. And I'm still in a shock myself. My wife's still kind of in a shock, especially my daughter. She wakes up, she just says, "Car, car, car." And I'm just there beside her. I'm crying. I don't know what to say. And I'm not just saying this for everybody to hear and to feel sorry for me. I know what I'm going through is, it's only a parent will feel that pain. And I hopefully hope that and think that person will get caught eventually, because he could do it again. Or he could have been anybody's child, and he could have been gone. The same thing, and that's.
And you think that, you say, from how you describe that, Daniel, it doesn't sound like he couldn't not have known, because even if he didn't realise it as it happened, there was all the roaring and neighbours and the commotion afterwards.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Is where I'm coming from is I wouldn't have blamed him, as I said, but I have to blame him because he left the scene. If he would have stayed there and he would have called the guards where they came or ambulance where they came and then get it dealt with, I could say, as I'm saying it now, it could have not been his fault. He could have done it without him knowing. But as you said there, it is his fault, and it has to be his fault because he left the scene, and that means he knew he hit my daughter there. And my daughter has a little two teeth in the front as well. There's a piece missing as well from the tooth, and the leg, I don't know what to say. I think it's forever she's going to have that problem there whatsoever, but she's still young. Hopefully, and please God, her bones will grow back up, and it's only fractured basically.
And do you believe that the car actually went over Sophia's leg?
I believe so, because a car would only do that leg like that, and there's actually a whole thing missing, her meat in front of the leg there. It's like a piece missing there. You could see in the inside, if you get me, the bones. I don't know how to tell you. You could see the flesh in there. Oh my God, it's shock. It's unbelievable. And please, I'm appealing again, all my neighbours in the Cordoff, whatsoever, with any information about that car, or if any information they know that person, because I believe that person lives on that street. He lives on my street there, and I don't know, I cannot do anything on my own, but with the help of the neighbours or anybody with any information, a blue Q7, I couldn't say the reg, but he kind of looked like it's a new car-ish kind of a new car. With any information, I'd be more than happy, because, as I said, he could do it to anyone else, and he could do it the same, and he could just run away. And I feel sorry for what happened to me, and I'm still in shock. I can't believe it.
Yeah, and I
know that's my story there.
The Gardaí have put out an appeal for information as well. Anyone with any information is asked to contact Blanchardstown Gard, the station there on 666 7000, or indeed the confidential line, or any Gard, the station. If anybody has any information at all about who may have been driving that Q7, oh, it's an Audi, you said, a blue Jeep.
It's an Audi blue Jeep Q7, it is.
On Saturday, the 7th of May, and who left the scene of that devastation for that little girl. What age is Sophia, Daniel?
She is 4 years old.
And I'm looking at photographs of her here, and she's a gorgeous little thing, and she is, I can see, yeah, she's her leg is all bandaged up, and she is there in her hospital bed in Crumlin, somewhere where she definitely should not be. Are you in touch? When was your wife taken off to the rotunda then, Daniel?
I'd say another half an hour ago, half an hour, 40 minutes ago from Crumlin here.
And she's actually in labour at the moment, is she?
She's in labour at the moment in Rotunda Hospital.
Oh God, it's a very big day for you, Daniel. A stressful time for you and a worrying time. Will you be able to talk to her while she's there? Will you go to her?
I will have to see my family's on the way as well, coming to the hospital here to me. And I might probably leave one of my members here, or I'll stay with my daughter and just send my family over, see if she needs any help or anything, because I don't know where to put myself in what position, to be honest with you. I don't even know what am I. It's a hard moment for myself at the moment.
You don't want to leave Sophia?
I don't, kind of, because if she doesn't see me or the wife, she's just going to cry, and she doesn't like any daughter. She doesn't like to see anybody. I don't know, since this happened, she's like, she only wants me and the money beside her, that's all. She's in a shock. She's telling me, Daddy, you break that car, you break everything. She told me, I says, yeah, I took care of the car. And she goes, you're my hero, Daddy. But what happened? And she just said that the car just hit her. And it's for a four-year-old child to say that and to have that consequences in her head that a car hit her. It's for me, it's devastating. I don't know. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It could have happened to anybody. And please, it will be confidential. Nobody has to know who gave information or who's given information. But any information, please come forward. I'll be more than happy. And may God bless everybody, and God forbid everybody from these kind of things to happen. It's a bad thing.
It is every parent's absolute nightmare, Daniel. It's every parent's nightmare. Listen, we wish you the very, very best there, and we put out that call out. If anybody wants to contact us, we'll pass it on to the relevant authorities, and we'll wish you the very best and your wife the very best. And
Thank you very much. Hopefully
we will hear good news from the rotunda, Daniel, and hopefully Sophia will make as full a recovery as possible. I'll give you those numbers again from Blanchardstown Garda station. They're on 666 7000. The Garda confidential line is 1-800-666-111, or as I say, any Garda station, just walk in if you have any information about who was driving that car and disgracefully left the scene of that accident, that crime, whatever, the 7th of May. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Or text us on 51551. Now, I want to go to Joanne. Joanne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Casey. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, Joanne, it's also a hospital-related story, but on a totally different note. It's about your mother, Joanne.
That's right. My mum is in need of a double bypass and a valve replacement heart surgery. And she is on the list as urgent in the Mater Hospital since before Christmas.
What age is she?
She's 76.
Okay.
So she's on the list since before Christmas in the Mater Hospital. And in March this year, she had all the preoperative tests done. She was admitted, everything ready to go for the operation. And on the morning of the operation, she was told at 8 o'clock that it was cancelled and she had to go home, that the surgeon's car broke down.
Right. Do I understand, have I got it right, that it had already been put off because of COVID?
That's right. Apologies. Yes, that's right. So it had already been put off because of COVID.
That was before Christmas.
That was before Christmas, exactly.
Okay, so this is the second time now. She's everything. She's all, as you say, pre-op, test done, all ready to go. And literally within hours of being wheeled into theatre, she's told there's no surgeon to do it.
Within minutes of her going into
within
theatre.
Minutes.
Due to go, within minutes of her going into theatre.
So stressful,
she called me at 7:30 that morning, and like 10 minutes later, the phone call back was, there's no surgery going ahead, Joanne. So that was cancelled, and we brought her home. Mam's deteriorated since then, and so the procedure since then was that I would ring or email every Monday morning to see if there was a slot available for her. The surgery is only performed on a Friday, we were told. And if there was a slot available on the Friday, then we had to wait till the Thursday to see if a bed was available. So this has been going ongoing.
Have you been doing this every Monday since last March?
Yeah.
Every Monday you email to say, is there a slot available?
Yeah.
And have you had occasions where there was a slot available and then subsequently a bed wasn't available?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. And I have gone, I have gone wherever I could and spoke to whoever I could, trying to find out what I could do to have this done for Mam, because reminded that she is on their list as urgent. And we've been told that COVID has occupied, which I know though, but has occupied so many of the beds, that the cardiac team has lost so many of their beds on their wards, and that only emergency procedures were going ahead. So it transpired that last week. And Mam now, at this point, at least once a day, she almost loses consciousness to go to faint. At home, along with all her other symptoms, pardon me, with pains in her arm, tightness in her chest, the inability to be able to do the daily tasks of anything, to looking after herself. And so we went to our GP, and our GP gave us a letter to go into A&E. So 4 days ago, we went into A&E, and after 2 days and one night in A&E, she got a bed on the Sacred Heart ward in the Mater Hospital.
So was she... She came in through A&E, having, as you say, had these episodes at home, and she still had to spend 2 days on a trolley and a night.
Yes, she did. And she's now currently in the Sacred Heart ward and the Mater Hospital. So yesterday, her surgery was told that we was going to go ahead. So the surgeon came around on Saturday evening to say that she was going ahead in a Sunday surgery. Again, all the pre-ops got done, including the showers, everything that needed to be done. And Mam waited all day yesterday, fasting from 9 o'clock the night before, to be told at 2 o'clock that her surgery wasn't going ahead.
Why yesterday?
Yesterday they said that there was a big case before Mam in the morning surgery, and there was complications with that case. God love whoever that person is. And that's the reason why Mam wasn't going ahead then for the afternoon surgery. And since then, the nurses and all the staff are phenomenal and are so fantastic and lovely up there. But nobody has come to her. And I've spent the morning up there this morning to try and see somebody off the team. Nobody has come to her to say what's going to happen or what's not going to happen.
So she's still there. She's still a patient.
Yeah.
And is she afraid she might just be sent home again?
Exactly. She's afraid she might be just sent home again. And in March, when she was sent home in March, when I went to collect her the day of her surgery when it got cancelled, I said, I'm afraid to take Mam home because, you know, I don't know, you know, if she's... I don't want Mam to become just another statistic of someone who didn't make it in time to the hospital when this is all in place. And they actually gave me a letter to say that, yes, she is urgent, but she's clinically stable, and if she started to experience any new symptoms, to present herself to A&E.
Which she did. And here you are now.
And here I am now. And, you know, my heart goes out for the call you just had before me, and I hope that his daughter is going to recover, and his whole family, and that person be brought to justice. And I know there's always somebody worse off than ourselves, but at the same time, my mum is important. And she is just being overlooked. And it's horrendous. And it's not only for my mum, although I want my mum to be looked after. It's for every mother in Ireland.
And tell me,
father in Ireland.
Joanne, is it your understanding, is there just one theatre available for these types of surgeries in the Mater? Is that the story?
Yes. This is my understanding. So a mum would have originally been linked with Beaumont Hospital, as she's a diabetic. And it was through them then, with their tests and with Mam's symptoms, they discovered this with the heart. Because she's been transferred from Beaumont to the Mater, because the matter is the centre for the heart, and this type of surgery done by a particular surgeon on a particular day in that hospital.
And as you say, her what she needs done, the surgery would involve, is it a double bypass?
It's a double bypass and a valve replacement.
So
it's major surgery.
Major surgery, yes.
It's major surgery, absolutely major surgery. And
she needs this because of heart disease, is it?
She needs this because of heart disease. Her arteries, her heart's functioning on 20%.
Yeah, so you can imagine what that impact on your daily
life is. I mean, before she would get up out of the bed in the morning, it would take her at least a half an hour. Now, Mum would say, "I'm lucky to be able to get up out of the bed. There's others out there who can't." And I think that frame of mind and her faith has really got us to the stage that we're at now. But now it's not. Now it's beyond urgent because, as I said, at least once a day, she'll have a fainting episode where she almost loses consciousness, and that wouldn't even be exerting herself. It's just the sensation and the feeling that comes over.
But sure, she must be only having like half living now, as in you'd be very nervous about doing anything or going anywhere if you were in that, if that's likely to happen.
Totally. I can't remember the last time she would have been in a shop. And as I said, she has great faith, and she would almost go every single morning for daily mass. We live in East Wall in Dublin 3, and the church is right beside us. Great community, fantastic neighbours that we'd be lost without. And since last Christmas, Mum has not gone to Mass. And we live beside the church, and she hasn't been able to go over.
So she's just so nervous about herself.
She really and truly is. She's afraid of falling. She's afraid, as I said, of that sensation of almost losing consciousness. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking watching your mother like this. And I am so helpless. And her life lies in their hands. And I just don't know where to go or what to do. And that's why I reached out to you guys, and from emailing TDs and phone calls. And I don't know. I just don't seem to be getting anywhere. And I don't understand why. I do obviously know the COVID and the impact it has had on so many people. But at this stage now, it's not being shown on television.
Yeah,
that surgeries are not going ahead. It's only emergencies that are going ahead. We're not hearing this on TV, you know. And the story I'm saying now, I'm sure the floodgates will open and the masses will come forward of how many of their loved ones, whether it be minor to massive surgery, is being put off. You know, I mean, there was one of our neighbours was on the trolley in theatre. There was a hip replacement, and she was told she had to get off the trolley and go back to the ward. The surgery was cancelled. Now, what those details were, I don't know. But that's what, do you know what I mean? This is what, you know, this is Ireland in the year 2022. And it's almost as if we're living in a third world country.
Yeah, I wonder, is there still some fallout from the cyber attack as well, complicating on top of the complications from COVID,
sure.
On top of the complications we hear of staffing issues and staff retention issues that we hear. But, I mean, it does seem to be extraordinary that there seems to be just this one theatre available that if you don't get in. And there seems to be, you know, if your mother is this serious, yet there is always somebody more serious, obviously, who gets priority and has been since last since last March.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grim enough scenario, Joanne.
It really and truly is, and that's what we've been told. And I have numerous emails saying to me that the emergencies is what this particular surgeon is doing, that they are going ahead of my mum. And obviously, as we said, God love anybody who's in need of whatever type of treatment. But at the end of the day, my mum is urgent on that list to be done. So my mum is urgent on that list to be done. What has anybody else got hope of having surgery who's not even urgent? Well, my mum can't even get the treatment that she needs.
OK, I've got another urgent case. Joanne, many thanks for that and the very best of luck. And I hope we hear some good news from your mother's case very shortly. I want to bring in Sean now. Sean, good afternoon.
Hello, and more doom and gloom, unfortunately. Story is on O'Connell Street yesterday, and two of my colleagues were there just before me, and he noticed this man.
You're a bus driver, Sean, are you?
I am, yeah. And the two bus drivers, my colleagues, they went over, they saw this chap, he wasn't feeling very well. So they sat him down outside one of the cafes, and I rang an ambulance for him. He had abdominal pain. And they said it'd be an hour for the ambulance to arrive. So the other driver had to go off the first while I looked after him. So I sat was with my other colleague, and I didn't know, she was starting to fall asleep. Now, if you fall asleep with chronic pain, the alarm bells went off. So what I did was I ran out and we got a taxi for the chap. And he couldn't walk. I had to actually lift him into the taxi. So I just said to myself, like, an hour is not an emergency anymore. If you had a stroke, appendix, you've only got an hour. This ambulance was saying it was coming after an hour. That's not an emergency. The other thing is, I found out this morning, I rang up a private ambulance, and they said they can't do emergency work. It's not allowed to do it with the HSE. And the third thing I was wondering, how did you prioritise a person who's ill? Like, if you have back injury, you can't put a person off a motorbike into a taxi, or a car accident with a back injury or neck injury into a taxi. Like, the whole thing is falling down. And I think the minister is playing a game, but it's not a very nice game he's playing.
How do you mean playing a game, Sean?
Like, we have systems that don't work. Listen to the other lady who were on there before me. The whole HSE doesn't work. It's falling apart, and they're just playing lip service PR. And I always say it's a game. That's part of the game, is the PR. It's not the reality of what's happened. There is no emergency service in Dublin or around the Republic. And now, you can understand it in rural area, maybe. Not in central Dublin, 12 minutes away from the hospital. And I reckon that why the private aren't allowed to get involved is there'll be too many people in the A&E at the one time. And I just wonder how many people are dying because of this. If you have a stroke, they say, you have 1 hour. Well, your hour is gone because the ambulance service isn't working. It's just not working.
I wonder, is it though, that those are the cases that do get the blue light priority, that they are the cases that the ambulances are tied up with, maybe?
Yeah, but then here's the argument to that. It's not a triage nurse you're ringing. It's an ambulance personnel who's just taking a phone call. Is he making the decision? That's what I'm ringing up for. Who's making the decisions here?
And presumably, were you clear with the ambulance that you thought this guy... What age of a man was this?
He was a young foreign chap, under 25. And it was unfortunate his people he worked for just let him go home. And he was in a very, very bad way.
He had come out of work, basically.
Yeah, he couldn't walk up the street. That's how bad he was.
Okay, so you would have been clear that you were very worried about this man.
It was when he started to go asleep. But fair play to my other colleague. He had the decency to go over and ask him, was he all right? You know, my other two colleagues.
Yeah.
And lucky we could get a taxi.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
It was very hard at times to get a taxi in O'Connell Street.
And fair play to the taxi driver for taking him as well, because took on a big responsibility.
Absolutely, yeah. Very nice man. I couldn't thank him enough.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good Samaritans in that story, Sean, from yourself and your colleague to the taxi driver.
It's not that the Samaritans I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ambulance service does not work. The emergency service doesn't work in this country anymore. And it's gone into a culture that we're accepting it now. Well, everybody else is. I was getting a number this morning I'm very lucky that I can afford a private ambulance. So I was going to get that for my family members and all that sort of thing. But I'm not allowed to use it.
Oh, you just put in that call saying, in case this ever you were in this situation for somebody of your own.
Yeah.
That you knew what to do if this happened.
I was saying to myself, I'm not very lucky that I can afford this. I can afford private health too. That's not fair to the rest of the people. Well, Patrick Pearce walked out of the GPO and said he wanted equality for everybody on the island. You know, still hasn't come. It's not equality.
No. And as you say, it's a very worrying scenario if you're told that. Yeah. You're really, really worried about somebody, and indeed, whether you know them or you don't know them, you're there trying to do the best for them. And
but if you were standing over him, Katie, yesterday, and you were looking at him deteriorate minute by minute, and you're saying to yourself, if I don't do anything now, and he dies, what would you think of yourself then? That's the way I was.
Yeah, very stressful, very worrying scenario.
Yeah.
And I wonder how common it is that you'd be told that now, because I know we've had this. This has come up before, and I actually reported on this myself as a reporter about issues with the ambulance services in Dublin. But we'll put it out there and see if anybody else.
But it's not the ambulance service, it's the minister. He's the captain, he's on the ship, he's responsible. and he's not taking responsibility. This is not the ambulance service. This goes to the top. He's paid very well and he's not doing his job.
Okay. That's one for Stephen Donnelly. We put that, we leave that at his door, Sean. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Sean. And well done. And well done yourself. You did a very good turn there yesterday.
You're the two chaps with me. Fair play to them.
And fair play to all of you. And I believe you paid for the taxi and everything, Sean.
Ah, stop. I didn't want that to come. I didn't want that to come up, Katie. I asked him not to. Jeez.
Well done, Sean. We need more people like yourself. Thank you. Thank you. I want to bring in Róisín now. Róisín, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, Róisín, you have an issue waiting for an appointment for your son.
I have an extremely... it's getting to the stage where it's very upsetting now because he is suffering so much, waiting now for 7 years on the waiting list. CAMHS had refused to see him until we got a diagnosis.
I'll stop you, Róisín, and just tell us a little bit about your son.
Oh, sorry,
first.
Yes.
What age is he?
He's 12 years of age and he's in sixth class.
Okay, what's his name?
Cahill.
Cahill. Okay, yes. And what are the issues with him?
Now, I had to bring him myself privately to be diagnosed. He has autism and ADHD. And the problem is the autism, really, there's nothing we can do about that. But the ADHD, he has no concentration in school. He has no focus. He has never actually completed any tasks for the length of time he's been in school. He is seriously falling behind when he is actually well able to do the work, but his concentration is so poor. He struggles so much. Like, it's getting to the stage now where he gets overwhelmed so much that, like, if someone takes out a packet of crisps, he could actually go through glass. He could go through glass to get away from someone eating crisps. It's, I don't know, it must be the smell and the texture or whatever, but he's struggling so much in school. Everything is overwhelming him. And he, about a month ago, actually got so upset in the classroom, he headbutted the table and broke his nose. And he has a deviated septum now ever since.
And you say, Róisín, that you're worried that he's a flight risk.
He is a serious flight risk. He has escaped school. The first school I took him out of because he was actually found on the road a few times. That was too dangerous. So in the school he's in now for the last few years, he's after finding escape routes at the very back. So that's why it's all a big rush if he does get upset or have meltdowns or anything like that, that they have to make sure, because safety does not come into the issue when he gets overwhelmed or upset or anything like that. CAMHS had refused to see him. My paediatric consultant had sent many, many letters to CAMHS. They said that until he's diagnosed by the public psychologist, once they have a diagnosis, they'll see him. That was going to... I was talking to people who've been waiting 6-7 years to see a psychologist and they still hadn't been seen. I needed help for Cahill. So I brought him to the Beacon privately myself. I paid for it. He was diagnosed with autism and ADHD. And it was basically, she had said to me, once he is on medication permanently, he will be able to concentrate on his work. He'll be able to everything, all the overwhelming things that sets him off, that makes him a flight risk, will all calm down. The sounds, the smells, everything like that.
And when was that again, Róisín? When was that diagnosis?
Yeah, I brought him in 2017 to the Beacon.
Right, so that's 5 years ago now.
Yeah, and myself and my paediatric consultant, he is absolutely amazing. I have to give the man so much credit. But he's been fighting for years to try and get Cahill seen by CAMHS. So he sent off a copy and a strongly worded letter of, you know, urgency. The school has already sent off a letter that Cahill wrote when he was very upset about how he wanted to die. I sent, they gave me a copy of the letter. He said he didn't want to live anymore. This was when he had a meltdown in school. He didn't want to live. Now, he has no issues at home. He is so placid. It's the concentration, the pressure of, you know, but knowing that... It's just... He needs medication. His life
but
will be
I,
so
what I'm
going to
ask you, though, Roisin, is can none of those other people that you have seen with him, can they not prescribe medication for ADHD?
You see, he needs to get in with a psychiatrist in his own area that he can be prescribed permanently. There was no point in her starting off with the prescription and then he have nowhere to go for prescriptions after that. Obviously, to stay with a private psychiatrist is ridiculously expensive, you know. But I was told by Cam that once, and my paediatric consultant was told as well through letters, that once they had a diagnosis, they would take him in straight away.
And that was five years ago?
That was five years ago.
You've had that diagnosis for 5 years. And what are they saying now?
They sent me a letter... with a form, about 20 pages to fill out about every single thing about Cahill, which I had already sent in many times before. I sent that in as soon as I could. Then they sent a letter out to say that he is on their list, but that the waiting time is very long. They had been missing a psychiatrist in our area for over a year and a half. So there's a backlog now of children, and here we are still waiting. Cahill now, he's going into secondary school. In the primary school, they have no kind of junk food. It's all healthy lunches that are to bring in. He's going into secondary school now, which there's no rules. They can eat crisps. I am actually, when I think about him going in, I feel physically sick.
Because the crisps are setting him off.
Yeah. And he's even asking me, Mammy, how can I stay in a school if they're eating crisps? I've been trying to desensitise them to crisps so many times, but there's even certain songs, if he hears, he will run, because obviously they have such a profound, I don't know, reaction to him, that the school actually had to ban those songs to be played if they were ever playing music. It took them a long time to know, and then when they told me, when I asked what song it was playing, and I said, no, he can't listen. That song is like a no-no. And these are all things that, like, if he had medication, everything like that, all the overwhelming, you know, sensory issues, they would all dampen down. He'd be able to concentrate. He'd be able to learn. The school, no, there's no point giving Cahill homework. They haven't given him homework now in the last year because it's so much. They're only giving him little bits. Mm. But from sitting in the classroom for 7 hours a day and then to try and get him to do anything when he went home, like, the teachers know exactly how impossible it is for him to... With any subject, he gets two or three questions. That's it.
Yeah.
He's only able to do two or three questions, maybe four. But the thing is,
and you really,
he gets them right.
But Roisin, you really think that if he could get on a regime,
yes,
that this could be life-changing for him?
Yeah. And the teachers, where he is now, there's a unit in the school. He's in mainstream, but they're well used to coming across kids like this. And they have said, like, they've seen children, like, once they start medication, they are a completely different child. And this is going on. The school has sent letters. The school has sent his letter where he said he wanted to kill himself. He wanted to die. And we sent that in. That was, I think, in September. And still here we are. I thought once they saw him write that you couldn't wait any longer, because this is him saying how he feels, you know, when he's in school.
I know. Yeah. But sure, you hear today, Roisin, though, that latest thing is those child and adolescent mental health beds are closing, and there's going to be, because they're struggling with staff.
Yeah.
It's
and I mean, in our area,
it's a terrible situation.
Like, I won't mention our area, but it's like a rotating door. They go in, they come out, they go in, they come out. They're constantly looking. So it mustn't be the easiest place to work. I mean, the conditions mustn't be too great if they can't keep staff in an area like that. You know, there's a major issue.
Yeah.
And they're not being dealt with. Yeah. I mean, this is not COVID. This has nothing to do with COVID. It's nothing to do with the HSE hacking. This is going on 7 years for me. It's going on. It's been going on. People have told me that they were waiting 7-8 years to be seen by CAMHS. So this is nothing new.
Yeah. Roisin,
you know, they can't blame this on anything. It's the government's fault.
Yeah.
Pure and simple.
Okay, Roisin, I have to take my break.
Okay.
The very, very best of luck. We'll put it out there. Hopefully your wait won't
thank
be
you
too much longer, and the best of luck to Cathal.
Hopefully, yes.
Okay.
And thank you very much.
Thank you
for taking my call.
Thank you,
Roisin. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, moving on, the provision of tasers for all frontline members of the Gardaí is being discussed by the GRA, that's the union representing rank and file Gardaí, at their annual delegate conference in lovely Westport today. Declan, good afternoon to you.
Katie, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, I do. I certainly believe it should be a must. I'm actually surprised it hasn't been introduced a long time ago.
You think this is a good idea, yeah?
I do, yeah, I do. And I think you know, I mean, I know you'll have the usual people with their crocodile tears saying, oh, this can be abused and all this type of thing. No, it won't be. Like, you have a situation now. I'm not a member of the Gardaí, but I've some other work, I don't want to tell you where, but I mean, my own work location, I've been in an accident, an emergency place, and I've seen a situation that got completely out of hand at all hours of the morning, on a night shift where people outside the hospital grounds, literally, or on the way into the hospital grounds, after a drunken brawl, I completely went out of control, and two Gardaí could not take control of the situation. And it was a very frightening experience. And anybody that can see, like, you take Gardaí, have to go out, rank and file Gardaí, to a domestic situation that can become very, very nasty. And I think it can become totally out of control. And I mean, in latter years, I mean, we hear things, we see things on the media, things that we'd never thought would have happened with knives and guns and weapons and so on. You know, I mean, it's just gone totally out of hand. And if they were never used, just as a deterrent, I think that would be sufficient.
But would you not be a bit worried, though, that they might be abused? Or not abused, but that, you know, they might actually serve to escalate a situation?
No, I think actually now once you start, once this could actually put the lid on a lot of situations, let me tell you. I've seen things, we've all witnessed of things becoming out of control, and then Gardaí are out, they don't have the manpower. You could have a situation like, I mean, I'm just talking about here in Carlow. I mean, you might only have 2-3 Gardaí on a night shift. One has to stay in the station. You might just have 2 uniformed people have to go out. A lot of towns like that are in that situation. They're totally understaffed. We'd all feel safer. They're saying, where are they? They're not out in the streets. They don't have the manpower to be out. Simple. That's simple as that. And I mean, they need the backup. They need the full backup. And I, as a member of the public, would feel safer if I knew Gardaí were out at night and they had tasers and so on. I mean, I know things quieting down when we had COVID and things like that, but it won't be long more before things start to crowds are back out again as much as they used to be and whatever. But I actually was surprised now that they're not already in use. That was what surprised me when I heard it on the radio this morning.
I know, because a lot of people might think that they might be, because we've heard about them on and off over period now.
Yeah.
But of course, the point about that is, though, there is a resistance from the, you know, senior people, either in the Department of Justice or in the Gardaí,
yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
which, to introduce them, because I know the rank and file Gardaí have called for them more than once now.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's probably maybe they're afraid of being accused in the wrong, but like my understanding is now, I'm only going by what I read on the media, that if there's a situation where Gardaí are out and a weapon has to be used, or there's some accident or involving a Gardaí chase or something, that it has to go through some kind of a process, some kind of a report after with GSOC or something. So, I mean, it'd be similar if you had tasers as well. So I don't see what's the big deal is, I think
well,
if you did,
but it's not nothing now, Declan. I mean, if you know you're incapacitating a person with an electric shock. I mean, it's a fairly big step for the Gardaí to move from.
I accept that, but like, I mean, sure, sometimes the Gardaí might have to use a baton. You know, I mean, that might happen. Okay, I've never witnessed it, but I'm just saying that I've never seen it, but that can happen as well. I mean, there's situations like that, and you have to remember it's not an easy thing for a Garda to have to do, I'm sure, either, to have to actually do that type of thing. So, like, I mean, I'm talking about even simple, you know, I just think we need more, they need more backup, they need more whatever. I mean, the public need to know that they're being protected, and, I mean, they are frontline people. I know people in healthcare are frontline people as well, and so on. I mean, there's talk of, you know, not just Gardaí being assaulted, but people, I mean, paramedics, nurses and doctors being assaulted in their line of work as well, that there has to be strict laws as well.
Indeed,
to protect them as well.
I wonder, is there a worry, though, as well, that, you know, if these are being carried, that they could be taken from a Garda and used against them or used against other members of the public.
Yeah, no, I do, yeah, I accept that. But I'm sure whatever, I just don't know how they're carried or whatever. I'm not privy to any of that. But I mean, sure, you could say the same about a Garda walking down the street that has to carry a baton or whatever with them as well. You know, but yeah. we've seen things. No, but I'm just saying the last few years, not leave COVID aside, we can't blame COVID for things, but the last number of years, we've seen situations like, you know, we hear things, say, you know, someone like me and Carla now, okay, we'd read about something or we'd hear something on the television, radio about something in parts of the big cities or whatever, but there are things happening outside, you know, that in towns and villages and streets that we just never thought was going to happen a few years ago. You know, I mean, just
do you think that though? Do you think things have gotten more dangerous or more violent out there?
Yeah, I mean, you have to think that you could have a couple of Gardaí, as I just said, right? A midweek night in a town, similar to Carlo, could be Kilkenny, it could be wherever, Portlaoise, go to a situation, they've get calls about a situation, they're going to a particular domestic situation or a house or a brawl, and the people involved in the brawl have knives, have weapons, but Gardaí don't have anything as strong as that. They have their baton, but I mean, you know, that's where we're coming from, and they have to make sure it's not only themselves. I don't mean it's themselves are trying to protect, but it's the public that they have to protect, which is the priority and which is what to do.
Yeah.
So I just think we've gone, you know, we can't have this kind of nanny state, and we have to this nanny. I think we need to just we have to come back now to this firmness, this, you know, back to basics, this thing.
Do you think it's right that Gardaí are not armed? Do you think that's a correct decision?
I don't think we're really at that stage yet now. I don't think anyone ever really wants to see that, you know. That's something I just don't think we'd see, like we see in America or places with Gardaí with guns and so on. But I know a special branch of the detectives have guns, all right, mm-hmm. But I'm just saying we don't want to see. But, you know, you have to think that you have a uniform Gardaí out going to a scene, and there could be knives, there could be any. I mean, you know, I mean, a few years ago, Katie, we never heard of knives being used on TV people and this type of thing. You know, what I'm just saying is not to the extent. I mean, there's things happening now that are not even making the headlines as much as they used to. You know, I mean, recently here in Carlow, I mean, a car deliberately drove into a business and set the car on fire at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I mean, it's only the prayers and everything was answered. That there wasn't. We didn't have people killed. We didn't have a huge national tragedy out of it. And the very quick response of the emergency services. But like, I mean, it could have been very, very fatal. And I mean, the brazenness of that at 4 o'clock in the morning to go down, drive the car into a business premises for retaliation or revenge or whatever you want to call it, and set the place on fire, knowing that they were going to do it. I mean, do we pay our taxes?
Mind you,
where they came from, if they were intercepted on the way, like, I mean, what weapons would they have had in the car? I mean, there isn't, you know.
Right. So you've no qualms at all about it anyway, Declan? You wouldn't?
I don't, actually. And I actually think it'd be no harm to see it. And it'd be little use of it would actually be a fantastic deterrent, I believe. And for the public, the public would know and would feel safer, because it's traumatic. If you see a brawl going out of hand. It can be very, very, very traumatic. I've experienced it, and it can be very traumatic. To try and control it, it's not as easy. And I mean, if people are as far as whatever, it's a drunken bra, but you don't know what else they're on, and people involved in it, they don't care, they don't see anything, and you don't know what weapons or what to have on them. Okay. And that's where a situation can become, and innocent bypassers can be the ones that can get caught up. Indeed. In the middle of the whole thing.
Indeed. Yeah. Will you stay with us, Declan? I have John, okay. I have John on another line, and I think you agree with Declan, do you, John?
I would, yes, 100%. I definitely agree with Declan there. He just really kind of covered, you know, everything that I was just going to mention, but from my own experience.
You work in security, John, do you?
Yes, I would have known, and I do know a lot of guards, young and old. And really, I mean, the challenges that they face, I mean, you can be sure that criminals would have tasers, and they wouldn't be afraid to use them when it comes to it.
Do you think there's tasers out there in the criminal world?
Oh, definitely. Without a doubt.
Because it's not something you hear about or you read about, I don't think. But have you seen, as a security man, would you have seen scenarios that could have been maybe sorted out with a taser?
Definitely. Especially if someone pulls a knife on you. You know, you need to think fast because you have to protect yourself. And, you know, not just in situations like that, but when a guard is getting into a domestic, I mean, he doesn't know or she doesn't know what they will face, and things can escalate so quickly. I mean, really, just have a batting is not the solution now.
And have you found yourself personally in that kind of a situation?
I would have, yes.
Where, like, how serious would it be?
Well, you see, unfortunately, you're dealing with people now. It's one thing dealing with someone with alcohol in them, but when they have drugs in them, you're going to a completely different level. So you cannot reason with them or try to talk them down. And, you know, everything is escalated. And all they want to do is inflict injury as much as they can on you.
And would there, in your scenario, would there have been weapons involved?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, what are we talking about? Knives?
Knives, bottles, glasses.
And you would have been in a situation where you'd be confronted with somebody wielding a knife or a bottle, a broken bottle.
Wow. Yes.
And what do you do?
You do what you can to protect yourself. And at the end of the day, you have to uphold the law and work within the boundaries of the law. But if I had a taser, I would use it. But unfortunately, I can't be issued with one.
Do you think security people should be issued with tasers?
It's something that, you know, they should be looked at, I think.
You can imagine that's going to be, if we haven't even got to the point of giving them to
know,
the guards yet.
I know.
It might be a bit down the road, but I'm just interested to hear you say that, because that could bring a lot of trouble as well, couldn't it? Because it would put you on another level then if you were armed in that kind of way.
Yeah, but just from my own experience with working with guards and knowing quite a lot of them, really, in this day and age, I mean, the criminals are so well equipped that they're really one step ahead all the time. All the time. I mean, take the situation here some time ago. There was a young guard, I think, doing a checkpoint up the country. And these guys just get out and give them a beating for no reason whatsoever. You know, and all he had to protect himself was a baton.
Yeah. I suppose the big thing there is to be on your own on any scenario like that, whether you're walking the beat or doing checkpoint duty.
Yeah, I mean,
it is a risky scenario.
Yeah, I think really in this day and age, sending one guard out to do a checkpoint is ludicrous. Absolutely. And you just mentioned there, I was listening to your conversation. It's funny about the electric shock. I mean, when you think of having a defibrillator, I mean, the electric shock is trying to restore life. Whereas with a taser, it is the electric shock, but you're not actually trying to take someone's life. You're trying to sedate them to a certain extent where they won't do themselves an injury, are you?
Yeah, I don't know enough about them, John, to know if there's a possibility of, you know, more damage being done. It's basically like a stun. It's to stun somebody, isn't it? It is.
But then again, look, if you're out causing trouble and if you're breaking the law that's there, and, you know, be prepared for the consequences, especially if you're going to threaten a guard with violence. I mean, there's no guard out there is a punchbag for the public. And, you know, and guards aren't being respected the way they used to be. And if a guard is carrying a taser, they may never use it. But it's a complete deterrent.
Right. John, stay there. I've got Lisa on another line. Lisa, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you'd have some concerns about this, would you?
I most certainly would. And especially in the security industry, Katie, that would be a no-no for me altogether. With guards, I know there are specialist guards who can use tasers, you know, who are licensed to use them and know how to use them. I do feel that, across every industry, you know, you have bad elements in every part of society. I think some guardie might be a little bit too trigger happy with it. I think that we would be better inclined to help the guardie maybe with a fitness program, because I've seen guards, and I genuinely don't mean any disrespect, Katie, I really don't, but I've seen some guards not able to run, you know, for a bus, don't mind run after a criminal. And I think to arm them with better physical fitness would be a huge help to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but when you say trigger happy, what do you mean? You mean?
I think it would be misused. I think it would have huge potential to be misused, do you know? And, I mean, they armed with a baton, and if they are helped with their physical, you know, training and fitness and that, I think that would be much better for them in their everyday, you know, work. It's a hard job. And as I said, you know, I would say 99% of Gardaí are, you know, responsible and do the right thing. And it's a very, very tough job. But they are aware of what they're signing into when they take this job on. They're aware of the dangers that they face every day. You know, I would hate to have a relative to be a member of an Garda Síochána, because they don't know what house call is going to end up with, you know, in disaster, or as that gentleman said, a roadside traffic, you know, a simple line of duty, and to be beaten like that, that's horrific. But I think that it's about fitness with the Gardaí more than arming them with tasers.
But sure, you could be as fit as a fiddle, Lisa, and, you know, a guy comes at you with a broken bottle or a knife and...
So you have a baton, do you know what I mean? As a Gardaí, you have a baton, you know, be fit enough to use it. I've seen some members of an Garda Síochána who are just not fit.
I know, but sure, Lisa, I mean, you know, I know the joke is you arrive to a gunfight with a knife, but if you arrive to a knife fight with a baton, you might be as badly off.
I just think there would be far too much potential for it to be misused. I mean, it's just... To me, it's a no-no. There has to be another way of dealing with that, you know, rather than just handing out tasers to people. People, of course, it would be misused, Katie. Really, you know, I don't see how it wouldn't be. And again, being respectful to the Gardaí who do their job diligently and do it properly. But there are other members of an Garda Síochána who don't. Do you know what I mean? And who do kind of, you know, turn to fisticuffs where it's uncalled for. We've all seen that. We've all seen it online, and we've seen cases go to court where Gardaí are battering younger members, you know, of the public. And, you know, it's very hard to kind of, you sit on the fence there with some of them, you know, you'd almost say, well, you can't blame them for reacting the way they did. They're dealing with thugs. It's okay. As simple as that.
Katie, a taser, now, as I said, I'm not 100% on it. I'm no expert on it or anything like that. I'm only going by what I read in the media. A taser in a traumatic situation would be less injury to the tug than a baton being than whatever, and it would defuse the situation very, very early. And as I said already, I mean, the security industry, I've experienced accident and an emergency going out of hand, going out of control over a drunken brawl, and people had people were left standing, we didn't know what to do, and it can be a very, very traumatic experience for everybody involved, for staff, for the innocent people and whatever. And if you had any, I mean, you would have caused more injury with a baton and whatever than if you had had a taser that could just defuse the situation. That's the reason I'm saying a taser would defuse, would numb the situation. That's the word. It would numb the situation until backup, until whatever, until the thing can be brought under control. But it can be very, very tragic. And I mean, things over the years, like, I mean, as I said before, back a number of years, there's situations happening now that we never, ever thought was going to happen. I mean, and I'm not I'm talking about outside the cities, in rural places, knives, whatever, that type of situation, and people are gone to the stage, they don't care. They have whatever domestic row, whatever feud, whatever gang rows are going on, they don't care about anyone else. They'll just use what they have to have it well planned.
So where do we draw the line? Do you know, do we give tasers to fire and ambulance responders, since they're the ones who usually go?
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that. No, of course I'm not.
But why are you not suggesting that? Do they not deserve the same protection?
Yes, but you'll start obviously with Gardaí.
Why would you start with Gardaí, though, when Gardaí are often there after?
Yeah, well, I've no problem if the public wants the paramedics fire services and whatever to have it. That's fine by me as well. I've no problem with that either.
Should all be allowed to have them. If someone breaks into my home...
No.
But where do you draw the line?
Well, the line is emergency services.
Why? I'm not saying that.
But there's many a situation where an emergency service can get called to a thing, to a scene, and it's not what it can go completely out of control.
I completely agree with you, but what I'm saying to you is, in that situation, if I call Gardaí, I need it.
Yeah, no, I...
Would you not agree? No, hang on. If you just calm down and listen to me for a second. If someone breaks into my home, I'm the one at risk before Gardaí emergency services, before anyone comes, I'm at risk. So therefore, for my protection, should I be allowed to have a taser gun, since I'm the one in the line of fire from the criminal before anyone else gets there? So where do we draw the line?
Yeah, I accept that. But where are members of the public? But the emergency...
Who are entitled to protection, of course.
Yes, of course you are. Of course you are. And also, we should be talking about more Gardaí manpower as well. Never mind, but even as well as the tasers. So, you know, I mean, as you say, when you have a town outside of cities, the likes of Carlow or Port Leash or Dublin, you might have only 2-3 Gardaí on duty during the night. And, I mean, they might have to wait. The nearest town could be 30 miles away for backup to arrive. So, as I said, to be frank about it, no, I would actually have more confidence in a Gardaí with a taser than a Gardaí with a baton. Because the baton can actually cause more problems for an accident in an emergency place. Okay, it should be used, but at least the taser would numb the situation until backup arrives and the situation would be able to be taken into control. I think, and as I said to you before, okay, some people say things can be open to abuse. We could say that about everything. We could say that about all walks of life. That's fine. But 99.99%, it wouldn't be abused. And as I said, it would be very rarely used. If you had a situation where this was used, I guarantee you it wouldn't be long now. I can tell you people wouldn't be long pulling themselves in and think twice about going out to...
Smack a child, they'll stop misbehaving. That's a ridiculous point of view.
Okay, Lisa and Declan, I loathe the way I am to break this up. I have to take a break, but stay with us and we'll come back to this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Des now. Des, you called him after listening to Lisa there.
Yeah, how are you doing, Katie? I just wanted to say, I think she's a bit, I don't know,
Careful now, Des.
as the other gentleman said there, she's, like, there's criminals out there, they've got knives, they've got bottles, they've got syringes, they've got all kinds of things there. And, you know, whether the guard is fit or unfit, they're not Chuck Norris. They're not going to go out there and be able to kick a knife out of somebody's hand or kick a gun out of their hand or anything else. The guards need to be armed enough to protect themselves and protect the people that they're there to protect. You can't be putting them into a situation at a disadvantage or have them in a situation where they need something and not have it, you know. And, I mean, there's guards up and down the country that are armed. You don't hear of them using their tasers, using their guns every day of the week. They're not all out there trigger-happy fellas. You know, if guards were given a taser, they're not going to use it. They're not going to want to use it.
Do you think every guard should have a taser?
Oh, definitely, yeah. As a minimum.
As a minimum? What else should we be giving them?
Well, I mean, we're calling upon them to protect people in the public. And like I say, you can't have them arriving into a situation where they're at a disadvantage, where the criminals are armed and they're not. You know, they should have whatever they need at their disposal.
Specific Gardaí do have whatever they need. That's why they've been trusted to be armed Gardaí. You know, they're trained with it. And that would be why you don't hear people being shot daily by Gardaí.
And if every other guard in the country was given a taser, they're going to be trained to use that taser. They're not just going to be handed one and told off you go.
Every guard in the country has to serve arrest for a crime. I see crimes being committed every day on the boardwalk along the Liffey. I see drugs being openly dealt with. I see Gardaí walk on by. Why are the Gardaí not using the powers they have in that situation, Dev?
Because in a lot of situations, the guards don't have the protection to go and do something like that. You know what I mean?
They don't have the protection to walk over. They can't arrest a person openly dealing drugs. You're telling me they can't. So if they can't use that power, what are they going to do? How will it change with a taser?
If you're a guard and you're looking at a drug dealer across the road, there's a strong possibility that drug dealer has a weapon on him in order to protect himself.
Again, we bring it back to fitness and even mental health awareness, the whole lot with the Gardaí. I think that's what they need, because they need the confidence to be able to walk over and do their job. Do you know?
So if that's the case,
by your logic, Des, a Gardaí is absolutely powerless without a gun or a taser or something to back them up. They're not.
No, in a situation like that, what's happening on a daily basis is they're calling in backup in order to be able to go and do something like that, because there's power in numbers.
No, they're not, Des.
They're not always able to go in and face somebody who's more than likely going to be armed, because they know they're not armed themselves.
Okay.
Why?
Now, in some situations, they'll know the drug dealers, they'll know who they are, and they'll know whether they're going to have trouble from them or not.
But you can't put somebody into
a situation where he doesn't have the ability to protect himself.
Okay, can I bring in Alfie into this? Alfie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I was just listening to your program there, and it makes my blood boil to hear all the people defending the criminals, and that's what I'd call them. I know we haven't much time left, but certainly, if I was Minister for Justice, which I'll never be, I would issue the Gardaí with guns after 5 years' service, and with tasers as well.
What, with guns, Alfie? You'd issue the guards with guns?
I certainly would. I'll make a point, one simple point. Recently, our President Higgins, he commemorated the death of so many guards, the murder of so many guards over the last 100 years, well over 100. And I'll guarantee you, if they were carrying guns, a big percentage of those would be alive today, or well, they might have died by natural causes. But you see, the criminals out there, and all the goody-goodies are standing up from all. He came from a bad Chuck family. We were all reared in hard times. Well, we respected the law and authority, and I make no apologies at all. And I know you have people ringing in now that to get that Alfie off the line, but no, I stay with it, and I stay with it all the time. They should be carrying guns, because they're well trained, they're highly trained, and they wouldn't use them in the
street. But the guards Alfie, don't want guns themselves. The last thing they want is to up the ante to that degree.
That's fine. They probably don't, but I'm saying a lot of people here in my. We discussed it in their various places. The guards don't, but some guards do, but they won't come out in the open set. I'm just saying it from a personal point of view, and from a national point of view, a lot of them should have guns. It's as simple as that. Now, that's the way I feel about it. Certainly, there would be many guards' lives saved today if they had guns and tasers.
Well, should we maybe we should just start with the tasers, though, if we were going to go down that road.
Could you just ask that lady, Lisa, dear, ask her if she was up against a fella who was there with a knife or a weapon in his hand, does she honestly expect a guard to walk up to that guy and deal with him with no protection at all?
What do you think that guard could be murdered with that knife. He'd get a slice in the throat or in the heart or something and be killed instantly. If he had a taser, he would have 99% have been saved. So it's as simple as that.
Okay.
You're talking about saving lives and people that's looking after a law all over this country.
Okay, Alfie, I have to leave that there. Lisa, many thanks. Des and Declan, many thanks for that. We'll take our last break.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And that's it. Thanks to all the team. Lisa Marie Berry produced today. Stand by for Ray Darcy.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.